Good morning to each of you, and I'd like to greet you in our Savior's name this morning. It's good to be in the house of worship and gathered with other believers who are endeavoring to follow Christ and have a relationship with Him. I welcome you each, and it's a blessing to have each of you with us this morning. Been blessed by the service, and it's my desire that God's name would continue to be honored and glorified as we continue on with our service. This morning, I invite your attention to the book of Ecclesiastes. I've been studying this in my personal devotion, and there is a phrase in chapter 2 that jumped out at me, and I wonder if God wasn't speaking to my heart about this issue and what He has shared with me. I plan to share with you this morning, and again, it's my prayer that God would work in our hearts and that we could learn from Him as we open His Scriptures. The phrase in in chapter 2, verse 1, it says, "Therefore enjoy pleasure." Typically, that's probably not something that we tell other people. And I've titled the message this morning, "The Peril of Pleasure." And we were talking this morning in our Sunday school class about conversion experience, and that's one thought I really didn't hear coming out, that therefore enjoy pleasure. And I know when we evangelize, when we tell other people about Christ, it's usually not something that we're quick to share, is therefore enjoy pleasure. So what is the purpose of this statement? What are we saying? And what are we to learn this morning about pleasure? And one of my first points here in a bit is going to be that God created pleasure. We know that we have pleasure. There's pleasure is a thing we relate to. And what is the proper view of pleasure? The peril of pleasure. Maybe you don't think that pleasure is a problem. Maybe it's not something that really bothers us. And I'm not quite sure how to feel about all that this morning, because I appreciate what I see in your lives. And you know, I see a people that has a heart that wants to be separate from the world, and they want to live their lives for God. I see that when I look at you, and I appreciate that. But yet I'm wondering this morning, we're living in a society that is fueled by pleasure. Is it possible that it might creep into our lives? Might the problem of pleasure be closer to us than what we really realize? How much does pleasure influence what we do, what we say, our actions? Maybe pleasure has a tighter grip on our hearts than what we're willing to acknowledge. And I'm suspicious this morning that pleasure has been a great downfall to many people, Christian and non-Christian, in the church, in society, chasing pleasure, living pleasure. Have you ever heard the term living the dream? I just had somebody tell me that not so long ago. I asked him how he was doing. He says, living the dream. And this was not a non-Christian. The peril of pleasure. Peril means that there is risk, danger, pitfall, threat, trouble. And by the title, I think it implies that pleasure might have some risk involved. It might have some pitfalls with it, and there might be some dangers and some threats. So again, we're faced with the question, how should God's children relate to pleasure? How does God feel about pleasure? I said God created it, and we'll look at that in just a moment. How does God feel about pleasure? Let's start by looking at the words of the wise man in Ecclesiastes chapter 2. And really, to do justice to this whole subject, we should read the whole book, but we don't have time for that, and I would encourage you for that. But we're going to zero in on verses 1 through 11 in chapter 2, and I'll read those verses at this time. I said in mine heart, go to now, I will prove thee with mirth, therefore enjoy pleasure. And behold, this also is vanity. I said of laughter, it is mad, and of mirth, what doeth it? I sought in mine heart to give myself unto wine, yet acquainting mine heart with wisdom, and to lay hold on folly, till I might see what was that good for the sons of men, which they should do under the heaven all the days of their life. I made me great works. I builded me houses. I planted me vineyards. I made me gardens and orchards, and I planted trees in them of all kinds of fruits. I made me pools of water to water therewith the wood that bringeth forth trees. I got me servants and maidens, and had servants born in my house. Also I had great possessions of great and small cattle above all that were in Jerusalem before me. I gathered me also silver and gold, and the peculiar treasures of kings and other provinces. I got me mansingers and women singers, and the delights of the sons of men as musical instruments, and that of all sorts. So I was great and increased more than all that were before me in Jerusalem. Also my wisdom remained with me. And whatsoever mine eyes desired, I kept not from them. I withheld not my heart from any joy, for my heart rejoiced in all my labor, and this was my portion of all my labor. Then I looked, and all the works that my hands had wrought, and on the labor that I had labored to do, and behold, all was vanity and vexation of spirit, and there was no profit under the sun. So let's start out this morning by defining pleasure. What is it? We use words like content, delight, enjoyment, satisfaction, happiness. And I find that all ties into the definition of pleasure. It's interesting to note that the Bible uses pleasure about 70 times, and it tends to be more of a general term. Like I said, there's different words we use, and they would all describe what we call pleasure. Obviously, it's not pain, so it's pleasure. Now, the Old Testament, the words pleasure would describe that which is appealing and pleasant to the senses. It's useful and profitable. It's abundant and plentiful. It's kind and benevolent. It's good in a moral sense, as opposed to evil. It's proper and becoming. Now, that's a very nice picture, very pleasant picture. We would call that pleasure, and who of us wouldn't want to find ourselves in that type of circumstances and situation? And according to Strong's, the best embodiment of what pleasure is, especially used in the Old Testament, would be in Genesis 1, when God said, "It is good." That was the scope of pleasure. After God created the world, there was obviously no sin, and he said, "It is good." Right there would be the perfect view of pleasure. Now, we know today that we do not have that. While we enjoy pleasant times, creation has sin entered the picture, and now we do not have what we had, what they had back then. And maybe we would say we no longer have pleasure. But how many people today are chasing that dream? They're looking for no hardship. They're looking for no pain. They're looking for no trouble. And everything should be perfect. So the question, can we really experience pleasure? Obviously, Solomon tried here in Ecclesiastes 2. He was trying to experience that thing of no hardship, no pain, no trouble. let's look at these verses a little bit. And there's one thing that we need to remember when we look at these verses. We know that they're written in God's inspired word. But there's an important thing when you look at the book of Ecclesiastes that helps us to understand what Solomon is trying to do here. And he uses the term under the sun. And what does he mean by that? He talks about these things happening, and I think he uses the phrase about 29 or 30 times, under the sun. And it helps us to get a little clearer glimpse of really what is happening here. And also it helps us to understand pleasure when we realize that he concludes in verse 11 that there was no prophet under the sun. Under the sun is implying here on earth. It's not a spiritual thing. It's not above the sun where God dwells, but it's under the sun here on earth. So we could say it's man's perspective of pleasure. It's man's perspective of these things. It's where man dwells, under the sun. And as I said before, to get the full scope of the book of Ecclesiastes, we really should read at the end where Solomon takes his listeners, he takes his audience, and he brings God's perspective into the picture. But in today's reading, what we just read, this is under the sun, or this is really man's perspective. And we need to remember that. We know that we as humans live under the sun. We're thankful for God's presence with us. But yet there are different things that we deal with under the sun. Now let's look at what is happening here in these verses. And we have Solomon, we know, that wrote this book. And he is, we could call it heaven an experiment. And we're really looking in on the attempt two of this experiment. And really, we call it an experiment, but actually, he is in search of an answer. He has a question that he is searching for an answer for it. And I believe that many, many people are also searching for that answer. And the question, we could sum it up in a couple different ways. But it is really, what is the purpose of living? Or we could say, can man, under the sun, where man dwells, can man come up with a purposeful, meaningful, satisfactory life? And Solomon was searching for that answer, for that question. And how many people around us, and maybe among us, and maybe even in our own hearts, we search for that. Maybe some days it's more, you know, really, what is the purpose of life? Why are we here? And Solomon, in his search for the answer to that question, he attempts a couple things. And today we're looking at attempt number two, but let's just think for a moment of attempt number one. Back in chapter one, what did he try to do? He had tried to apply all the knowledge that he had to solving this question. He extended everything he had in his mind, all the learning that he had. Obviously, it was back before the days of Google where he could just Google the question and see what came out. But he used everything he had to try to solve this question of what is the purpose of living. And at the end of chapter 1, he says that in much wisdom is much grief, and he that increaseth knowledge increaseth sorrow. So he goes into attempt 2. Surely there's an answer for this. He tried the mental. Now he's going to try the physical. Everything he has, he's going to apply to the physical. God made us with 5 senses. We have taste, sight, touch, sound, smell. We have the 5 senses that God created with us. Solomon decides that he's just going to overload himself with everything that he can to satisfy himself in a physical way. This is his second attempt. And this is what we call pleasure, when we are attempting to satisfy ourselves from a physical perspective, money, possessions, appetites, desires, sensations, activities, everything that is possible to experience in a physical way, surely won't that bring satisfaction and fulfillment? You know, Apostle Paul, we were talking about him this morning some, and he came across a group of people who lived by this belief. Their chief aim in life was to experience pleasure. And we will probably in a few Sundays, didn't look ahead in our Sunday school lesson whether we will study about this group of people or not, but they're called the Epicureans. And they based their belief after a man called Epicurus. And we read just a little bit about him in Acts 17:33. Where it mentions Paul at Mars Hill, and one of the group of peoples that were there with him, verse 18, was Epicureans. Then certain philosophers of the Epicureans encountered him, and they engaged Paul in a conversation. And we know that story, but what I would like to bring out here is this group of Epicureans who follow the man Epicurus. They believe that happiness or fulfillment was found by seeking whatever brought physical and mental pleasure and by avoiding whatever brought pain. Their chief aim in life was pleasure. Now, does that sound like 2018? The interesting thing is that there are people today that still follow the teachings or the beliefs of Epicurus. I'm told that there are large Epicurean communities in Greece. Probably one of the names that we could connect with a little bit more would be Thomas Jefferson. You would probably recognize the words that they are endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And Thomas Jefferson listed Epicurus as one of the most rational systems remaining of the philosophy of the ancients. So he had, I don't know how much of his life was controlled about this Epicurean philosophy, but it is something that has stayed on with society through the ages, that surely we can find what we need in life by following pleasure. Just rid ourselves of everything painful and seek to follow pleasure. Again, we have Solomon making that attempt. And if anybody could do it, couldn't Solomon? I won't attempt to list this morning everything that Solomon had at his disposal. But surely if anyone could find pleasure in living, it would have been him, because who had more than what Solomon did? However, he attempted, as we read through these verses, he attempted to do this. And we will see what happened. And then I'd like to point out one thing about his attempt. And I think it's interesting to note, because often when we see people following the way of pleasure, it appears like they're not really looking at life realistically. And pleasure can do that to our minds, where we don't really think about the deeper issues of life. But Solomon, it says, see if I can pick them out here. In verse 9, it says that also my wisdom remained with me. And then I think it, in verse 3, it implies that also, yet acquainting my heart with wisdom. It appears like Solomon, as he lived a pleasurable life, he did it wisely, if we can say it that way, and it almost seems like a contradiction. But Solomon was a wise man, and I don't think he threw all his wisdom out and just sought whatever his body, his senses desired. I feel from this that Solomon, he wisely pursued pleasure. He knew all the possibilities, and he knew all the good things, the great works, and everything that appealed to the taste, sight, touch, sound, smell. He knew all the things, and he wisely pursued putting this all into his life. And where did it happen? What happened to Solomon? What did he find out? Can the wisdom of man, no matter how wise, find the key to pleasure? I would like to give us a few points that we need to remember about pleasure. And I would also encourage each of us to let God's Spirit speak to our heart. And I don't know how you're finding it in your life, in your walk. I don't know what's pulling at your heart, but let God help you apply these points about pleasure, things that we need to remember about pleasure, and let God speak to your heart about this issue. Number one is that God is the creator of pleasure, and I already touched on that, but I want us to remember that when we think about pleasure, that God was the creator of it. And if we think that if God created something, then surely it is good. But we also realize that pleasure, just like any other feeling, that while it was created good and perfect, it was tainted by sin. And we face that in our whole life, everything we face. While it was created good, it was tainted by sin. And the same is for this thing of pleasure. God made us to be able to feel pleasure. And we have in our capacity of feeling, we have a spot that's designated for pleasure. And God made us that. God created Adam and Eve, an environment of pleasure. All things that God created. It seems like Satan, the devil, can take certain things that God created and use them in a stronger way to distract people. Number two, pleasure for pleasure's sake will leave you empty. And we find that Solomon shares that for us in verse 11. His conclusion was, "Behold, all was vanity and vexation of spirit, and there was no profit under the sun." Solomon's conclusion was that it was all vanity. And what he means by vanity, it was like a vapor. It was empty, meaningless. Nothing there. Meaningless. There's a quote by G.K. Chesterton. And he says, meaninglessness, if we can get our mind around that word, meaninglessness does not come from being weary of pain. Meaninglessness comes from being weary of pleasure. And as you ponder that, I think he has some truth in that statement. Sometimes our lives can look wearisome because of all the hard things that we face. But yet, pleasure for pleasure's sake will leave you empty. And I don't know how you find it. But sometimes when I look back at the end of a day, when I look back, and it was a day that was well spent, things went, you got things done, and it was an enjoyable day. And you feel good about it. But then other days you sit around and you're just not really doing anything profitable, and maybe we'd call it more of a pleasurable day. And sometimes those days can actually, at the end of the day, you feel worse about yourself than a day that was spent doing something profitable. Pleasure for pleasure's sake will leave you empty. Ernest Hemingway, he was a writer, novelist, journalist that lived in the early 1900s. And he achieved fame and success early in his life. And he lived among the elite in Paris. He hunted big game in Africa, watched bullfights in Madrid, fished for blue marlin in Cuba, enjoyed an endless stream of whiskey and sensual pleasure, and he owned numerous houses around the world. And in 1961, not sure how old he would have been at that time, but he was making his home in Idaho, and one morning he took his favorite shotgun off of the wall and ended his life. And why? If anybody had everything, again, it was this man, Ernest. But yet, he was miserable. Pleasure had left him empty. Number three, pleasure, created as something good, has the potential to ruin our lives. And we just heard about Ernest Hemingway. We read about Solomon. Pleasure, it has the potential to ruin our lives. Our society actually has a word, and I don't hear this much among us, but our society has a word to describe people whose chief goal in life is to experience pleasure. And we talked a little bit about the Epicureans, but the Epicureans did have one thing going for them. And that was that you needed to be cautious in this thing of pleasure. In other words, if you drink too much, you're going to have a hangover. So just be careful, back off on the drinking a little bit. That was how Epicureans faced life. You know, if there's too much of a consequence, then hold up a little bit. But there are people out there who abandon all reason and just pursue pleasure. And the word that our society has given to them is hedonism. Now, it sounds a lot like heathenism, but it's actually hedonism. And it comes from a Greek word, and this Greek word is found in our scriptures. The Greek word, if I can say it correctly, is hedone. And three times in the Bible, this word is used, and the point I would like to make here is pleasure has the potential to ruin our lives, and if we abandon reason and pursue pleasure, what will it do for us? I'd like to read these three passages at this time, and the first one is in Luke 8:14, and I'll just read the verse 14. And I think you will recognize the setting for this verse. It says, "And that which fell among thorns are they which, when they have heard, go forth and are choked with cares and riches and pleasures of this life and bring no fruit to perfection." This word pleasures is one of the three that is hedone. And this is the word that our society says hedonism. It's somebody who pursues pleasure as a way of life. If we pursue pleasure as a way of life, it has the potential to choke and to drown out God's word in our heart. The next one is in Titus 3. Chapter 3 and verse 3. Again, we have this word that we would say is hedonism. Titus 3:3, "For we ourselves also were sometimes foolish, disobedient, deceived, serving divers lusts and pleasures, living in malice and envy, hateful, hating one another." And possibly when we look back, we talked this morning about our conversion experience. Maybe when you look back, you see where you were pursuing pleasure with your heart instead of pursuing God with your heart. That is hedonism. The pleasure is the chief Pleasure has the potential to ruin our lives. And the last one is in 2 Peter 2:13, and it says, "And shall receive the reward of unrighteousness as they that count it pleasure to riot in the daytime. Spots they are and blemishes, sporting themselves with their own deceivings while they feast with you." The results, consequences of those who live a life of hedonism, where they just believe, pursue pleasure as their aim in life. Let's remember that pleasure, although it was created as something good, has the potential to ruin our lives. Number four is the real path to pleasure is in giving, not getting. And we could apply this materially, we could apply this spiritually, and maybe we should do some of both. But we have the phrase in Acts 20:35 where it says, it is more blessed to give than to receive. Now, what brings you more happiness or pleasure? Is it when you give or was it when you receive? And this is counter to what the world would tell us. But Solomon, he pursued pleasure by overloading his senses. Everything he could get, everything he could consume, everything he could do, he did it in a pursuit for pleasure. What would have happened if he would have started just giving it to people, helping people, reaching out? We know that in itself is not sufficient. But yet, the real path to pleasure is giving, not getting. We know that sharing brings happiness. Sharing brings pleasure. And one of the big things when we think about pleasure, I believe, is thankfulness. When we're willing to give thanks for what we have received. And I think that is one of the things we quickly lose when we start getting. When we start having a pleasant life, when things are going well for us, we stop thinking, now really, why is today a good day? Why do we have many blessings? It's because of God. It's because of the good things. It's because of our Heavenly Father. Real path to pleasure is giving, and we should be giving thanks for the wonderful things that we have. Another giving that leads us to pleasure is surrender. When we're willing to give up our desires and our goals and what we feel is necessary for our lives. Number five, purpose in life is found through pain and not through pleasure. And that's hard to say that this morning because we run from pain. We don't like physical pain. We don't like emotional pain. And it's hard when God brings pain into our lives. But if we're wondering about purpose for living, I would like to tell you this morning that it is not found through pleasure, it is found through pain. Then said Jesus unto his disciples, "If any man will come after me," and here comes the pain, "let him deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me." Are you willing to experience pain this morning? "Whosoever will save his life shall lose it. And whosoever will lose his life for my sake shall find it. For what is a man profited if he shall gain the whole world and lose his own soul? Or what shall a man give in exchange for his soul? For the Son of Man shall come in the glory of his Father with his angels, and then shall he reward every man according to his works." And if you have pursued pleasure instead of pain, what will the Heavenly Father reward you for your works? The question is, do you want your pleasure today and your pain tomorrow, or are you willing to experience the pain today so that you can experience pleasure tomorrow? And again, it's difficult when you think of painful living and what God calls us to as Christians. Even though we're blessed in our lives, but yet God tells us to do without. God tells us that this is going to distract you. And that brings us to our next point. Number six is pleasure is legitimate if it does not distract, diminish, or destroy your commitment to Christ. And I want you to remember those three things this morning: distract, diminish, or destroy. And it's our commitment to Christ. First of all, we need to look at, what is your aim for life? We talked about purpose for living, but what is your aim for life? And this morning we're here as Christians, and I'm confident this morning that your desire is to serve Christ with all your heart, soul, and mind. Are you committed to do whatever it takes to stay true to that aim? And we need to think about this, that if anything distracts, diminishes, or destroys your relationship with God, it's an illegitimate pleasure. We could say that any pleasure, no matter how good, if not kept in balance, will distort reality and destroy our God-given desires. And we could apply that in many different ways. But it's anything that will distract us. And some things, although they're good, we had an enjoyable day on Monday together as a church family, doing enjoyable things. But if we did that 7 days a week, it would soon distract, diminish, or destroy our relationship with God. And it would become an illegitimate pleasure, even though in itself those things are right and good. I implore you this morning to seek God's guidance when you're applying this to your personal lives. Each one of us are walking a journey with Him, and we do not want things to distract us, and we do not want to have a relationship destroyed. So let's pursue legitimate pleasures. The last one I have for us this morning is, ultimate pleasure is found by drawing close to God. What is good pleasure? God created pleasure. What is ultimate pleasure? It is found by drawing close to God. And the closer you draw to God, the closer you draw to good pleasure. I would like to read a verse from Psalm 16 and verse 11. And it's interesting to note the word pleasure in this verse. And I would like for you to remember this verse. Psalm 16, verse 11 says, "Thou wilt show me the path of life." If you're wondering about the purpose for living, if you're wondering the meaning for a satisfactory life, "Thou wilt show me the path of life. In thy presence is fullness of joy. At thy right hand there are pleasures forevermore." And this word pleasure, if you look it up in its original meaning, it is only used this time and one other time in Scripture, and it's referring to those good things from God. It's not talking about all the earthly sensual things. This word pleasure is talking about those things that God can give. Ultimate pleasure is found by drawing close to God. How is it with you this morning? Do you find yourself being drawn to the pleasures of this world? Do you find yourself giving more time to the nice things rather than the good things of God? Maybe the pleasures of the world are distracting you from God's ultimate pleasures. And I would like to this morning encourage you to draw close to God. Do you want real pleasures that will really satisfy? Again, God is holding out His hand, and at His right hand are pleasures forevermore. And may He give us the strength and the wisdom to apply this as we face life from day to day, that we would not let pleasures distract us from following Him. Let's kneel at this time for prayer.